of course, I want to talk about your new book, and I want to talk about your other books and your work, but I just give me a perspective about yourself. I wanted to talk a little bit about you. You were born in Texas. What did your family do?
They were commercial artists, and they brought me to New York when I was 6 years old, and they tried their luck here and worked here and sent me to school. I went to Barnard, and then I was working in New York. I had an apartment on East 56th Street for quite a while, from age 21 until 32, I think. I was traveling a bit, but I could always hang on to the apartment. Very convenient.
So New York is almost like a second home, then, I guess. Huh?
Well, I know it back in the old days, but it's always changing and growing. And
when did you leave New York permanently?
I would say 1961. I went to Bucks County, Pennsylvania. Very nice there. New Hope.
Oh, yes.
In the vicinity of New Hope.
Yeah.
Beautiful country there.
But there was something about Europe that kept calling you, huh?
Yes. I don't know. I like the people. And, of course, in New York, one can meet people who were born in Europe. And you get acquainted with them, and you see them again in Europe and England and France.
Now, your mother and father were commercial artists. That sounds like a relatively cultured family, so...
Not necessarily, no. Well, my stepfather, Highsmith, was working for the telephone, the Yellow Pages, this layout, lettering and things. And my mother did fashion work for newspapers, really. Also for Women's Wear Daily for a while.
A literary household?
No, there were books there, but in New York, it was a great pleasure for me that the public libraries here when I was a kid. I can't remember where. When I didn't have a library card, but it was great fun to take out six books or go to another branch and take out another six. And it's terrific because you haven't got that in Europe. I think the American people ought to be very proud of that.
Is that right? I thought that, I don't know about the rest of Europe, but the English were boastful about their libraries.
That's true. The English have it. That's very true. But it's a little bit sticky in France. You've got to pay 30 francs. That's a pittance. But it's somehow a little bit stickier in France to join it. And I don't think you have the number of libraries that you have here.
You know, I found out something shocking about France. They don't publish hardcover books there.
Occasionally they do, yes. I know, they're rather floppy, flexible.
Yeah, I'm told that they can't make money on hardcover, so they only print paperbacks. Isn't that shocking when you think about it?
Well, I don't know. They must have a certain durability. They really don't fall apart.
The paperbacks?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they're flexible, and sometimes you can... They're wipeable, even. But I have a couple of my own books in French at home, which are definitely hardcover.
Recent books?
I think this one, in fact, the Found in the Street. Yes, it's called Une Créature de Rêve, something like Dream Girl. Yes.
What did you study at Barnard?
English literature and composition.
And what did you?
I have simply a B.A. in liberal arts.
What did you expect to do with your B.A. in liberal arts?
Nothing. I wanted to avoid learning anything useful. I never learned to type properly because I didn't want to be stuck with a secretarial job. I still don't type properly, but I type.
What did you do when you got out of college?
I looked for a job and moved away from home. And I answered an advertisement for Reporter Rewrite in the newspaper. And I thought it was probably a newspaper. And I walked into a comic book outfit with posters of Black Terror on the walls and various characters who could fly in the air and rockets and all that. So I was there for 1 year. And it's like learning a trade, you know.
Well, what does a reporter do in a comic book?
Well, that was absolutely wrong, because the quickest way to say it is like turning out two grade B movies per day. You have to think up the plot and type it fast as possible. And
so you wrote the scripts?
Yes.
And then the illustrator?
Scripts. Yes, and the illustrator, there was a sort of, what do you call, bullpen or something, where four fellows were sitting there drawing, and there were three fellows writing the stuff besides me.
So the faster you could turn out the stuff, they'd be drawing it, huh?
Almost. It had to go for editorial approval. But it was a smallish office. I've forgotten the name of it. It's on West 45th Street. And then, after I learned that, I was not paid a very handsome salary, but after I learned that, I could do it freelance. So I decided to, I went to Mexico and failed to finish a book I was working on. And I came back to New York absolutely broke, but I still had my apartment. And I could do this comic book writing freelance and earn really twice as much as my salary had paid me and still have a bit of time left over. So in a way I was very lucky there. I could have some time to write my short stories and try another book.
So you began writing short stories, and you placed these short stories in of course this was an earlier era when the magazines were more responsive, right?
Yes, well, I didn't. I had two of the sleek things. This was in the mid-40s. Two, I'm not good at the writing for sleek magazines or boy meets girl things, but I got the idea for Strangers on a Train when I was 24 and took a stab at it, but I never finished the book until I got to Yaddo. I was recommended to... it's a wonderful place for writers.
So I've heard.
Yeah, and painters too. Then you can. I stayed 6 weeks there.
How do you get into Yaddo?
You have to have three recommendations, and one that I had was Truman Capote, who needed my. He wanted to sublease my apartment for. He had to finish A Tree of Night, and he had a deadline, so he recommended me. I knew him slightly, and then David Diamond, who is a composer. And Mary Louise Aswell, who was the editor of Harper's Bazaar then, and she had done one of my stories. So with that, I was able to get into Yaddo. It was a real blessing.
Is that where you finished Strangers on
the Yes, I began it over again. Maybe I had almost half the book. You have to tell them what project you're working on and give them a synopsis of the rest, and then they pass on it or not. So, but... just the quietude and the fact that you don't have to worry about buying groceries for dinner, it's fabulous. And everybody was working 7 days a week with pleasure.
How long do you stay there?
6 weeks I was there.
Oh, that's nice. Who published Strangers on a Train?
Harper. It was called Harper Brothers at that
Harper
point.
Harper Brothers, yeah, I believe it
I think
was.
So.
Yeah. What year was that when that came out?
1949 it came out. Sounds like Age of the Dinosaurs.
Well, that book is still in print, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
I don't think it's ever been out of print, has it?
No, that's quite true. It's still in print.
As a paperback today. You know who the paperback publisher is?
Oh, Penguin.
Penguin.
Yes.
It was an ingenious idea, and of course, Hitchcock made a dynamite film out of that. Was he pretty faithful to the book?
No, well, mainly yes, but he had to cut out the second murder. The nice young man in my book commits the second murder, that is, the father of the psychopathic fellow. But they couldn't make it in the film, so they cut it. This was Raymond Chandler. He couldn't make it.
He couldn't
make it. He couldn't make it convincing.
Chandler wrote the screenplay?
Yes, along with somebody else. I forget the other person. I think that the script is attributed to him.
You must have been very pleased, however, when you saw the film.
Oh, I suppose so, yes. I was in Europe then, working on something else, yes.
Well, here you were writing the short stories. You'd given Strangers on a Train a try and didn't complete it until Yaddo. What was it like when you first picked up a copy of this book for the first time, your own book? How did that feel?
Yes, I remember opening the carton on the floor in my apartment in New York, and I thought, my first thought was, these are taking up a lot of space in the world. And there it was, sort of a cube, and it's funny that that should occur to me, but I still remember. I didn't feel particularly proud or shy, but I thought, these take up space.
Well, that was only the beginning. You've
yes.
written some 30-odd books, right? How many books?
I think they Found in the Street, they called the 19th novel. I would have thought the 18th, but it doesn't matter. And then 5 books of short stories. Mm-hmm. A book of short stories, I think it will be 5 by tomorrow officially, because London is coming out with a new book. It's called Tales of Natural and Unnatural Catastrophes. And I have great hopes for success of that, because it's amusing.
It'll be a while before it makes its way to these shores.
Not necessarily, because I think the Atlantic Monthly has the press, who did Found in the Street, they've made a bid for the catastrophe stories, so it doesn't have to be translated to come to this country. So I don't know. That's up to Atlantic Monthly when they want to issue it. I think publishing houses don't want to issue things too quickly, you know.
Now, I'm trying to define your work, and they're not always mysteries as such, and they're not always thrillers. They kind of take thriller, I think, is probably the best description, wouldn't you?
I suppose, yes. They're never mysteries, because I can't write mysteries or puzzles. I go along usually with the murderer. So there's no mystery at all. Just everybody knows exactly who done it and why. So.
Not found in the street.
Well, that's true. That's an exception, but it's not the major part of the book, the finding out who did this, because the death of the girl comes quite late in the book.
And shockingly, too. I didn't expect it. I mean, I expected something else, and I didn't expect that to happen. So you threw the reader a curve, which is nice. But as in Strangers on a Train, here are essentially innocent people who get caught up in events that seem to go out of control, that they have no control over. Is this a typical approach that you use for most of your work?
I suppose so, yes, because I can't identify with anybody else. So to some extent, I like psychopaths, as in Bruno in Strangers on a Train, but not as the protagonists, really, not as the chief character, because they're not appealing to me. They're just sort of weird.
Why did you decide to put Found in the Street in New York?
Oh, because the whole, I think the atmosphere in New York, it's very freewheeling for young people. It's easy for anybody to come and try to make a go of it, as this young girl did. She's 20 or 19 when she comes here. In New York, you don't have to have a certain educational level. Anybody can come in and try to get somewhere in the New York system, or the American system. So that's why I did it. And furthermore, I know New York. I used to live on Grove Street.
Well, I have to say one thing about the artist and his wife. They certainly had an active social life and a lot of friends.
Really?
Yeah, they were going out every night to parties and galleries and openings and things like that.
Well, I had 2 parties, yes.
Well, it seemed like a lot compared to...
That's true.
I don't think I've been to a party for 2 years.
Maybe you're very hard-working.
Now, tell me about your perception of Linderman, the character who is probably the most elusive of all in the book.
Well, he's a prudish kind of fellow and not terribly intelligent. He hasn't a real insight on himself. But he means well. He's certainly honest. And he is rather puritanical. He's worried about the girl's morals. And he doesn't want her to meet the wrong kind of people. He's something comical about him, I think, because he mistakes her. He gets the wrong signals. He mistakes what he sees.
I was a little amused by some of the... you've been in Europe for how long?
I don't know, 25 years.
25. Well, I was a little amused by some of the expressions that you use, which are certainly European.
I had to switch, coffee white, which is English, to coffee regular. That was for last night's reading. That was a mistake. Somebody pointed it out to me.
Well, you use shopping trolley for shopping cart.
Oh, instead of trolley.
Yeah,
instead of carrier or something.
It's cart.
Oh.
In New York, they call it a shopping cart. So, I mean, this doesn't make any difference, but
yeah.
I mean, I could see that European influence, because they would call it a trolley there. Or story, spelled story, S-T-O-R-E-Y, which
yes,
is an
well,
English spelling.
Yeah, well, it's funny that the Americans didn't correct it, because one of my friends, I must admit, he's a Canadian, but he said S-T-O-R-E-Y is correct, even in American, if you're talking about a building. So I'll have to check it in next time I get my hands on a dictionary.
It's not incorrect, because it is an established spelling, so it's not incorrect at all. But it's an English
version. Not preferred, you mean?
Version. Well, it's an English version.
Yes.
Whether or not that's not necessarily correct, that it's not preferred, but it's the English version. But I mean, that's not bad. I mean, matter of fact, I have a feeling a lot of people probably think you're European or English.
Uh-huh.
You've been away. How does it feel... when you're over in Switzerland and so far away, and your books come out here, you're so divorced, and how do you keep up with the reaction and what's going on?
Well, I have an agent here, and always had. And my Zurich publishers, that's for the German language. They're also my world agents, which I know sounds funny in America, that your publishers are also your agents, but. They're very good at keeping track of the press cuttings and news.
You've been translated into quite a few languages, haven't you?
Yes. I don't know how many, maybe 9 languages. But it's not all... certain ones are habitual now, such as the French and the German, and what else? The Italian, they're picking up lately. The Spanish... lately like me very much. But I can't say all my books are always done by all of them. I mean, I have books in Yugoslavian at home of mine, Polish. But it isn't always regular.
You said a while ago that you deliberately didn't learn to type because you didn't want to be put in the position of having to do secretarial work, which so many women had to do in the 40s and the 50s, but without this, you said you had some ability to type. Doesn't this slow you down at all when you try to write?
Yeah, to some extent, but I don't mind that. I like to correct a manuscript by hand. I don't use the word processor as yet, and I have an electric typewriter at home. It's an Olympia electric, and I still don't. It's there. It's got a cover on it, and I seldom, very seldom use it. I use my old Olympia, which I bought in 1956. It never needed a repair. It's an excellent typewriter, made in Germany.
Mm-hmm. Do you always have a writing project at hand?
Yes, practically always.
And what sort of events or people give you ideas for your books?
Oh, I can never predict that. It's sometimes the most unlikely people or unlikely events. Or if I'm, rushing for a train or in a state of anxiety, an idea that doesn't pertain to that at all will come into my head. Rather a good idea. I mean, just quickly.
Well, I wouldn't want to rush into a train. I might bump into Bruno. Well, Patricia Highsmith, I think your fans are going to enjoy Found in the Street. I certainly did. It's a book that's quite compelling and hard to put down, and the suspense gradually builds, and that's exactly the way you planned it, and that's exactly what happened. And I congratulate you on this latest book, and it was certainly a pleasure meeting you. Welcome back for your visit to these shores.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for coming in to talk to me.
A pleasure.